This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about the former Boston mayor, Kevin White, who died on Friday at the age of 82. Before the break, we heard about his 1968 appearance at a James Brown concert in Boston the night after the assassination of the civil rights leader Martin Luther King.
That incident helped secure White's reputation as a liberal reformer. But in 1974, right in the middle of his mayoral tenure, Boston faced a federal court order to desegregate its schools. Months of racial violence followed, in which protesters threw stones at buses carrying black students into white neighborhoods. That helped define Boston as a racist city back in those days. So how did Mayor White respond to those turbulent months, and how has the city changed since then? We're going to talk about that for the next few minutes. And joining us from California is former Massachusetts Governor Michael Dukakis. He served from 1975 to 1979 and again from 1983 to 1991. And Governor Dukakis, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Nice to be with you.
And
enjoying 75-degree weather in Los Angeles.
Stop talking about that. Also with us is Ted Landsmark. He's president of and CEO of the Boston Architectural Center. Ted Landsmark was also the subject of the famous 1976 Pulitzer Prize-winning photograph that showed him being attacked by a man with an American flag on the steps of Boston's Government Center during the busing violence. And Ted Landsmark, thanks for joining us. Great to have you.
Nice to join you in this conversation.
It's a good one.
Hello, Governor. And it's Boston Architectural College.
How are you?
I'm sorry about that. Boston Architectural College. Forgive me for that. Also with us right here in the studio is Fred Salvucci. He's a former advisor to Mayor Kevin White, and he was also Secretary of Transportation under Governor Dukakis. And Fred Salvucci, great to have you.
Thanks. Hi, Governor.
I don't have
Hi,
to.
Hi, Ted.
Hi, Fred.
I don't
Hi,
have to
Fred.
Introduce you guys, obviously.
No, sir.
Okay.
And let me. Know, Ted was a young associate in my law firm, so.
Oh, there you go. So we're a happy family here. Well, I want to just
known each other for a long time.
Call out to our listeners that they can join the conversation, folks. What do you recall from those years during the buses crisis, and what's your sense of how Mayor Kevin White responded? You can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter and Radio Boston. And Michael Dukakis, let me start with you if I could. We just heard that great report about that amazing night at the James Brown concert in the Boston Garden in 1968, just 24 hours after the assassination of Dr. King. Just in your view, how important was that moment in defining who Kevin White was and the way he was going to be mayor around this issue?
I don't know that it was a defining moment as such. I mean, Kevin was a progressive guy. He was certainly strongly committed to the civil rights revolution, and that was something that was part of his DNA and had been since the time I first met him, way back when he was nominated for Secretary of State in the 1960 Democratic State Convention, which was my first state convention. So I don't know that it was a defining moment, but Kevin was a terrific crisis manager.
Hmm.
He was not a kind of detail, everyday, all-over-the-place manager. Certainly not the kind of guy that Tom Menino has been, who really is into the details of city government all the time. But he was terrific in emergencies. He was terrific, as I say, as a crisis manager. And although I think what he did that night was extraordinary, I wasn't surprised by it. I'd be interested in Ted and Fred's thoughts.
Yeah, let me go to you.
He did that very well.
Fred Salvucci, you were a young advisor to Mayor White at the time. Was that characteristic of his leadership?
Those great instincts certainly were characteristic. And it was interesting to hear the byplay that he was initially not going to do it and that Tom Atkins convinced him to do it. And it was that willingness to go with his gut, which was, fortunately for those of us in the city, almost always in the right place. But that instinct was great.
And Ted Landsmark, you know, many cities, Washington, D.C., to Detroit, elsewhere, went up in flames in the wake of Dr. King's assassination. That didn't happen here in Boston. Does Kevin White get some credit for that, in your view?
I don't think there's any question but that he laid a strong foundation for a tremendous amount of healing that had to occur as events were occurring, and then certainly subsequent to that. Boston's a very small town, and in the policy-making ranks and in the ranks of activists, Everyone gets to know everyone else pretty quickly. And Kevin was really good at surrounding himself with people who understood the policy implications of their daily actions, and then went out and actually made the phone calls and did what had to be done. And I think that what Kevin did was to mobilize a number of people around him and to listen to them closely in terms of what needed to be done to keep the city calm.
Hmm. So let's move forward.
There was also an incredible amount of organization in back of that night. I spent that night in the old Boston City Hall working a phone. On the other end of a phone was Lloyd King, Mel's brother, who I had never met, and I forget who the third party
Mel
was.
Mel's brother.
Yeah. There was a network of people in Roxbury, and any incident that occurred was getting forwarded back to City Hall from observers in the community like Lloyd, and with communication to move resources in, particularly to dispel rumors, because rumors in those situations were coming up all the time. I don't know who organized the effort. I was just told, hey, we need you to show up at City Hall tonight and answer the phone. Hmm. We spent all night on opposite ends of the phone catching rumors, trying to get the real story, getting it back out. But there was Kevin was great on the instincts, but there was also an organization in back of what kept the city quiet that night. There's no disputing the great instincts of the Jimmy, of the concert, but there was an organization in back of that helped hold the city together through that crisis too.
So let's move forward a few years and into those years defined by the court-ordered school desegregation and the busing crisis. Ted Landsmark, I wanted to come to you for this, just to sort of set the scene for us and give us a sense of the racial climate in Boston at the time of when Judge Garrity's order came down. If I have this right, you were a student then, but you were on your way to Boston. Set the scene for us. I mean, what was going on in the city in terms of the sort of racial mood?
Well, a number of the city's key agencies were under court order to address major racial disparities that had existed in the city for quite some number of years. The fire department, the housing authority, certainly the schools were as much under scrutiny from the federal courts as they were from the local electorate and from the folks who were in City Hall trying to manage things. The tone on the street was a very tense one. Mel King, who has already come up in this conversation, was discouraging folks from going to Red Sox games. If you were an African American, you felt very uncomfortable attending any kind of sporting event at the Boston Garden. It was not uncommon to be on your way to something at the Museum of Fine Arts and to have someone drive by and start shouting racial epithets at you. So it was a time of significant tension for many of us who might not have grown up here, and certainly for all of the people who lived here. And that tension, as much as anything, discouraged a lot of younger African Americans from moving to the city, because the sense was that it just wasn't a welcoming town to move to.
Hmm.
And it was worse than that.
Tell us.
The Boston that I grew up in and that Fred grew up in was racist. It was anti-Semitic. If you were a person of color, you didn't live on the Back Bay side of the railroad tracks. You stayed over there. When Kitty and I were students at Brookline High School in the 50s, I think we had four African-American kids in the school, and all but one of them was the child of a janitor who lived in the basement. That's the way you got into Brookline. If you were a person of color, you didn't rent a place. Roland Hayes, the great, great tenor, only bought a house through a white straw and lived on Pill Hill, but that was it. And you could work on this side of the railroad tracks, but you couldn't live over there. And that was the city that we grew up in. I mean, you got to understand this. When I was a kid, there was no person of color behind a department store counter in downtown Boston. It was only the African-American ladies with the white gloves that operated the elevators before the escalators that you saw there. I mean, that was Boston, you know, progressive, liberal Boston. It was anything but. And it wasn't much better, believe me, in the 60s. You also had an elected school committee of five members, not a single African-American. And I don't think there's any question that had you had a thoughtful and progressive and enlightened school committee, a great deal of this could have been avoided. But that's not what we had at the time. I mean, just some modest, thoughtful redistricting could have integrated the system, but they weren't prepared to do that. And so that's why we ended up with a court suit and the court order and Judge Gattery's involvement.
Right, and
totally avoidable if we had had the kind of leadership we should have had.
And what I'd like to do is sort of get to a point where we're going to talk a little bit about how Kevin White dealt with that. But Ted, let me come back to you because, again, just to give listeners who might not know or who are too young, really, to recall, you can add to what that climate was like that Governor Dukakis was just talking about, how racially charged it was. Tell us what happened to you in that moment that was caught by a photographer when you were attacked by someone with an American flag. What happened that day in front of government center?
Well, the ironic thing was that I was on my way to a meeting in City Hall to try to negotiate employment for African-Americans, Latinos, and Asians on construction projects that were going on in their communities, where they found that construction workers were coming in from outside of Boston, and they were all white, and you couldn't get a construction job in your own community. So I was simply on my way to work in a meeting in City Hall, and a group of students who had just met with Louise Day Hicks came out of City Hall, fired up, on their way to the federal courthouse building to demonstrate against the federal court order. I happened to be among the very first African Americans who they encountered, and they tried to kill me as a group, and in particular with an American flag. Fortunately, they did not succeed, but the point was, I never provoked them. I was simply on my way to a meeting. It would be as though a plane suddenly fell out of the sky on you in terms of the unexpectedness of it. But it was also something that was going on in many of Boston's neighborhoods. The daily newspapers were chronicling people who were being attacked across the city in a variety of random attacks, where gangs of individuals would simply accost someone, and that in many respects was the least of it, because the worst violence in most respects was being directed towards young school children on their way to school, provoking no one. There shouldn't have been any angst directed towards them, and they were being met as they got off their school buses by thugs with baseball bats.
Folks, we're talking to Ted Landsmark, Michael Dukakis, as well as Fred Salvucci about the days of the busing violence in Boston, in particular about the legacy of former Boston Mayor Kevin White and how he handled that. You can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Let's take a call from Nancy in Framingham. Hi, Nancy.
Yes, good afternoon. I've lived in Framingham for 50 years, almost exactly 50 years, and I've seen a lot of demographic changes in my own community and in Massachusetts as a whole. And it came to the point that during the mid-1960s, it was expected nationwide that cities would blow up racially and there would be racial riots annually across the nation. And it could have and almost happened in Boston at the time of Dr. King's assassination, and I was listening to the tapes of Mayor White live on stage with the marvelous performer James Brown, and how that was pulled off so beautifully, because it was scary. It was scary that week of King's assassination, and I believe that the National Guard, and there's a National Guard armory in my community of Framingham, was on guard, on alert, this in case something really blew up in this area. But it didn't happen, and how it didn't happen was quite remarkable. And after that, there were no more race riots nationwide in this country.
Well, Nancy, thanks so much for that call. I'm going to read something off of RadioBoston.org that listener Jim writes. The James Brown concert is one of the most important and pivotal points in the city's history. That's from Jim at RadioBoston.org. Let's listen to Mayor White. This is a recording. Jumping forward now to that busing violence and to the kind of tension, Ted Landsmark, that you were talking about just a moment ago. Here he is at a press conference responding to a question from a reporter about the violence, this violence in South Boston. The first voice you're going to hear is the reporter's. Then you'll hear Kevin White's.
Are you convinced that there is a feeling in Southie of cooperation and that there are people there where cooler heads will prevail in the long run?
In the long run, there's no doubt in my mind, and there's no doubt further in my mind that there's a large segment that expresses a sentiment that feels that this is not what is happening in the best interest of South Boston, that South Boston's image or sense of community is being damaged, that there is a small group that is contributing to the leadership and the disruption. It will require, as it does in every community, for the leadership, good leadership, sane and constructive, to assert itself. But at the moment, that leadership hasn't obviously controlled the situation to the degree in which we could guarantee the safety of the children and withdraw the police.
Fred Salvucci, let me ask you, just give us a sense of how Kevin White responded to that violence, how he tried to respond to what was going on. Because as I listen to that tape, I get the sense of someone who almost feels it's beyond his control.
Yeah, well, I happened to be in the mayor's office the night before the South Boston disaster occurred. And there was information coming in from youth activity workers, from the local police, from the little city halls, that the word on the street in South Boston, where there was a lot of anger about the Garrity order, that the word on the street was, if you see federal troops, don't mess around, because you'll be in federal court and no one's going to help you out. If there are no feds, don't worry, we'll take care of it in the local courthouse, where it was all locals. And the mayor sent Herb Gleason, Corporation Counsel, to meet with Judge Garrity to request a federal presence to help maintain order in that very dicey situation. And the answer came back while I was sitting there. I couldn't believe it. That Judge Garrity says, anything the mayor has to say to me, he can say in open court in my session. Imagine the mayor of the city saying we're about to lose control in a public courtroom. It was absurd. Garrity refused to even discuss the matter with the Corporation Counsel. There was no federal presence, and the top blew off the next day. In my view, Kevin was getting pressed from both sides. There were people who thought that if the mayor talked about how the desegregation order was going to improve education in the school and exercise his charismatic leadership, he could convince people that it was going to work and that it was in the best interest of the city. There were other people who thought that this was a bad idea that was never going to work and that the mayor ought to put his leadership into opposing it. The mayor's view, which I think has been borne out by history, was that no persuasion was going to convert either side and that Garrity proved to be totally intractable and that his job was to try to hold the peace in the city. And he poured himself and his stomach into the effort to save the city and particularly the kids from violence. The first day the buses rolled, we organized people of goodwill, particularly in the white communities, to stand at the schools to prevent violence from the less responsible people in the community. Good friend Mary Ellen Welch, a wonderful woman in East Boston, organized up in Jeffrey's Point a number of her neighbors to stand there and talk to people and basically say, shame on you. You're going to throw a rock at a little kid? It was all of those non-visible people organized largely by the mayor to step in and say, don't argue about the merits of it. That's an unwinnable case. Argue that we have to hold the peace in this city.
Maintain the peace. Yeah.
That's not what this city is about. He did it to his own detriment politically. On both sides, people were mad at him. But he did his job as he saw it, and I'll always admire him for that. And I think he pulled it off. The city basically held together. And it's been a long time since those incidents, and I had three kids in the Boston Public Schools. I don't think that the Garrity Order has improved things in any way.
Well, before we go down that road...
But that's another matter.
Yeah, I mean,
the question
matter.
Is, what was the definition... What was realistically possible for the mayor to do? He defined it as holding the peace, and he carried it out.
Do you agree with that, Michael Dukakis?
I do, although, as Fred and Ted both will recall, it needed some state presence as well. And almost as soon as I became governor, I put 50 state troopers into South Boston, who I think Fred had a significant impact, probably for the reasons that you described, because they were a state-level force, but there were also great examples of heroism. My Secretary of Public Safety, as Ted and Fred both will recall, was a wonderful guy named Charlie Berry, who was my Secretary of Public Safety for every minute of the 12 years that I was governor. He was the district police superintendent at the time, and if it hadn't been for Charlie Berry's physical courage, a black man would have been killed by that mob. I mean, he raced to him, pulled him out of the mob, covered him with his body, and got him out of there. So there were individual acts of real heroism which were taking place, in addition to Kevin's effort to get white folks, responsible white folks, to try to keep the thing under control. And it was a good long while, as we all know, before any semblance of peace really returned to some of these communities.
Governor, stand by. I want to get Rick into the conversation. Rick is calling from Winthrop. Hi, Rick.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
I just want to say that those memories live vividly in my mind. I remember clearly 1970. I went to the James P. Timulty, and it was all of a sudden we got the word that we'd being bussed out of our community. And on both sides, both black and white, there was no education about why it was happening. It was just happening. And I remember going to the Taft in Brighton and getting off the bus, and we were met with such, I mean, yelling, screaming. When we were in the classroom, we weren't even safe. Coming out of the classroom, fights everywhere, up and down the corridors, going home, fights everywhere. The kids from Fidelis Way Projects coming down early to meet the bus. A couple of my friends stabbed, you know, walking down to Alston Square. Police would stop us and say, "Where are you going? Or who are you?"
And Rick, any sense of the mayor at that time? What was the sense you got from Kevin White?
I'll tell you, I had the fortunate pleasure of meeting Kevin White, and I was in a crowd, and unbeknownst to me, a picture was taken. And I was going to school at Eggleston Station one day, and I happened to look up on a billboard, and there was Kevin White and me right next to him. I think what he did for the city as best he could for the time was unbelievable. And I remember all the work he did at Faneuil Hall Marketplace, and I wound up working there for 13 years. But in reference to Kevin, he was a little bit ahead of his time, and I'm pretty sure if he had more time, he would have done a lot of great things for the city.
Well, Rick, thank you so much for that recollection and for your call. Ted Landsmark, let me come to you. Adrian Walker in this morning's Boston Globe, quoting Mel King, "I think people's perception of him," meaning Kevin White, "is based on tall buildings to the extent that that's the hallmark of a world-class city. That's what we have. For me, the question is, what impact did he have on the social issue that still gnaws at this country?" Sort of an implied critique there. Is there merit in that? Do you agree with that?
Well, I think Mel's point is well taken. It just needs to be remembered that one doesn't transform the social fabric of a city in 2 years or five or ten as such. Boston was highly traumatized by everything. Not everything that went on because of the desegregation order, but by everything that preceded it. by everything that had already divided the city. Many people point to Judge Garrity's court order as a moment that changed things. Well, it changed things to the extent that it brought to the fore patterns of racism that had existed within the city and the region for decades. And so I think it's a little unfair to expect that one person and his or her team will transform all of that overnight. I think that what Kevin did was to lay the foundation for transformative change in the city. He surrounded himself with excellent staff. He had an African-American deputy mayor who was one of the most powerful people in the city. The buildings are important, but what he was also able to do was to begin a process that has led to a number of social changes in the city, made it much more welcoming. And even as there is work that continues to be done, one has to ask, what if he hadn't done the things that he did?
Interesting. Michael Dukakis, we literally have maybe 30 or 40 seconds left, but I'd like to get the final thought from you, just sort of adding to what Ted Landsmark said. He laid the groundwork for changes that we've continued to see in this city. Fair to say that the city's come a long way since then. I don't know how much you credit Kevin White for.
I think he deserves a lot of credit, as do his two successors. I don't think there's any question about it. And today, Boston is a much better city, still has a lot to do, but a much better city than it was. One other thing he did, and Fred knows this better than anybody, because he was one of the so-called Little City Hall managers, he took city government out into the neighborhoods. And that was the first time I remember, Fred, any mayor doing that at all.
See, it's funny, he's referred to as the downtown mayor, and yet he had these networks in the neighborhoods, didn't he, in a big way?
More than networks. I mean, he had people like Fred Salvucci out there working with folks and bringing the government out to them. And I don't recall a mayor prior to his time that ever even talked about doing that in any serious way.
Well, we've got to leave it there. I want to thank all three of you for joining us. Governor Michael Dukakis, he served as governor of the state of Massachusetts, 75 to 79, 83 to 91. Governor, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Great to be with you.
Fred Salvucci was a former advisor to Mayor Kevin White and then Secretary of Transportation under Governor Dukakis. Fred Salvucci, great to have you, and thanks for making the trip over here.
Thank you.
And Ted Landsmark, President and CEO of the Boston Architectural College, former advisor to Mayor Ray Flynn as well. Thank you, Ted Landsmark.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, violinist Marissa Licata strikes out on her own. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.